Shavuato world. Today's daf, Nisbetzer Shabbos Kodesh, Masechet Chulin, is daf Kuf Zayin, and we're holding six lines down from the top of the daf, Omar Rav Papa. So we're continuing on learning the dinim of Netilat Yadayim. Once we were talking about the need for Netilat Yadayim after eating cheese, between cheese and meat. And then we started talking about the basis for the takkanah of Netilat Yadayim b'chlal in terms of the dinim of Truma, and from there, understanding Bisrach Truma, and from there, seeing the Rabbozim in the Torah, like Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. So we got very much into the idea of Mayim Achronim, Mayim Rishonim. And now we'd like to learn what the particular dinim are of the Mayim Rishonim that we do before eating bread. So Omer of Papa, Tai Arita de Daloi, Ein Dot Limi Menu Liadai. So what was very common is you had these little irrigation ditches, and they were generally an amma by an amma, and people would pour with buckets. They would pour water from an adjacent stream to the beginnings of those little channels, and then the water would spread down the channel. Now, you cannot put your hands into this channel and expect that because somebody took a bucket and he put that water into the channel, that therefore the water that's coming down the channel is good for Netilat Yadayim, because after all, a bucket's a nice big kli for Netilat Yadayim, so why is it no good? In order for something that is to be kosher, the netilah has to come directly from the direct force of a human who's pouring it. So you'll say, isn't this a human who poured it? He picked up the bucket and he poured the bucket into the channel. Why isn't that a human's force? Because remember, we were mechalek, and we've had this sugya in numerous cases. One of them was the question of whether somebody is chayev for opening up a bitka d'maya. Is it considered to be kochel? And the question whether you'd be chayev misa for the old case of tying the girl down to the train tracks, the difference between if the train is coming and all stuff like that. So we discussed all of this. And the same issue is true over here. If the person would have thrown the water directly onto your hands, or even if you're close enough to the place where the person throws the water from the barrel, that it's actually coming directly with the force still of the original throw, then that would have been called koach gavra. It has to come be koach adam. But once it's just flowing down the channel because somebody put it in there, that's only called his a groma, basically, but it's not his direct koach. And so, therefore, it's not considered to be koach gavra. So we learned from here a new din. The Netilat Yadayim Rishonim has to be poured directly with a human force. But what's interesting is that if it's mikraf legabe davla, if you're close enough to the person who's pouring, then it's ka'atu mikoach gavra, and then it would be fine. You could wash your hands by simply putting them into the channel and getting the next time that the guy throws a bucket and you feel the force of that bucket, then you would actually be yotze. But here's a really crazy case. Suppose the bucket has a hole in it, okay? And that hole is a hole the size of kones mashke. What kones mashke means is that if I set this bucket down on a damp area, the water will go into the bucket from the outside. Now, it's easy for water to flow out of a bucket, and that's your yoytze mashke. But it's more difficult for water to go into a bucket, obviously, because over there you've got the problems of not having the gravitational force that is helping you in pulling it out of that hole. And over here, you've got the issue of the problem of breaking through the surface tension of the water, and because there's no gravity, it's got to be a bigger hole so that the surface tension doesn't get in the way. So that is called kones mashke. Now remember that normally, when you're talking about a mikveh, you want to connect something to a mikveh. What's the size that you need to connect to a mikveh? What's it called? Who remembers? Kishvo Feret Hanod. So it has to be the size of a Shosheret Hanod, which is Teyat Spa'ot, that are able to be twisted around in the hole. And also, it's going to require a connection, not through Nitzuk. Nitzuk means it's just a flow. How do we say Nitzuk in English? Gosh. You know, where you've got like the actual flow, the flowing piece of water. I forgot the word for it. I'm telling you, these senior moments are... Okay, but anyway, so normally you would need for the opening to be between two mikvahs and not to have a spurt of water that's coming in from the hole. So in this case, however, when it comes to tefillat yadayim, Chazal were making, and they said that in the event that there's a hole, even if it's much less than the size of Shofarat HaNod, it's only Kekones Mashke, and not only that, there's water spurting out of the bucket that is going into the little river that this person is drawing water from. So when he pulls out the bucket, the water is still coming out the other side from the hole. And when he pours the bucket into the channel, there is therefore a direct continuation of water from the river on one side that's coming out of the hole to what's pouring into the channel. So what you have over here is an actual connection of the river, which is a kosher mikveh, to the channel. And therefore, we're being very makel over here, of course, but therefore we view it as a mikveh in terms of the tefillat yadayim, technically, and you could be tovo, your yadayim, in this channel. So either through koach gavra, which would be a din of netilat yadayim, or through tefillat yadayim, because it would have a din of a mashka. So let's see that inside. Ibezia davla b'kones mashka. If the bucket has got a hole in it large enough for kones mashka, then milef life, then your means that you've got a connecting stream of water all the way from the river into the channel. Umatvil bo etayadayim, and therefore that would be kosher. The Amar Rav, another important thing is that we've been talking over here about this kli kones mashka. It's only good for tefillat yadayim. If that would have been the same kli that the guy was pouring into the channel, and you wanted to use his koyach gavra for that to be the actual tefillat yadayim, so then it wouldn't have been kosher. Because once a kli has a hole in it that is big enough for kones mashke, it loses its shem kli, and it's not no longer able to hold water in it at all, and because of that, it's batel mishem kli, and therefore eino tli mimenu liyadayim. So another halakha that we just learned. So we learned, first of all, the din of koyach adam, and secondly, we learned the din of kli shalem. You need to have a kli that doesn't have a hole in it if it's supposed to be kosher for your netila. But is that true? Sorry, I skipped. And then we have a third halacha that we have to realize, and that is kli she'in bo revi'it. If you don't have a revi'it of water in that kli, it's not kosher for netilat yadayim. Really? I thought Rava said kli she'in machazik revi'it. A kli that doesn't hold a revi'it is not kosher, but it doesn't actually have to have a revi'it. So isn't that mashma, that ha-machazik, if it does contain a revi'it, if it's able to contain a revi'it, then it doesn't need to have a revi'it in it at this moment. So ha-machazik, gafagavavetle. How do you explain that contradiction in Rava himself? And as all of you stalwart learners of Yadayim, except for Richie, who wasn't interested in learning about Yadayim, he wanted to wait till Chulin. So for all of those who had learned Masechet Yadayim, you will actually remember that there's no kash over here, because one revi'it is necessary for one person, but you don't need one revi'it if two people are there. Why is that? Because of our special halacha of shiarei tahara. So remember what shiarei tahara means? That if you've got two people that are going to be notlim yadayim from one revi'it, then it would be kosher. So that, let's say you start to pour from a single revi'is, and you've got one guy that's got his hands, you're pouring on his hands, and underneath that guy's hands, you've got somebody else that put his hands there. That would be kosher for both of them, even though by the time the water gets to the guys who's further down the road, you no longer have a revit. And therefore, all that you needed was that the kli should be mazik revit, and that's called shiare ta'ara. Remember, we had big machlokasim back then about whether this could even be one after the other. It doesn't mean necessarily that you have to have one under the other. And remember that we had another shita that was very machmir, and that the din of shiare ta'ara still requires you to be mashlim by bringing other water in order to be mashlim afterwards the rest of the revias. We had a lot of different shitas over here. But in any event, there's certainly no contradiction in Rava, because if you want to tell me one person is going to be noto yadayim, you must have a revias. But if two people are going to be noto yadayim, and the first person has already started pouring, then the second person does not require a revias, but he does require that the kli was mafsik revias. And that's a beautiful explanation of both statements of Rava, such that there is no stira between them, because the Mishnah said, Tetznan mei revi'it notnim liyadayim le'echad, ve'afilu lishnayim. Omer le'Rav Sheshes ve'ameima. So Rav Sheshes wanted to know what was accepted l'halacha in these inyanim. So he asked Ameima, kabditu amona, are you very makbid on Rava's psak, that the kli that you use has to be a kosher kli? Omer le, absolutely. In, I am indeed. Are you makbid achazuta? Do you also make certain that the water looks like water? So even though we know that the inyanim of a mikveh is not going to be a problem if it looks different, but over here it is actually going to postulate if it doesn't look like pure water. And are you makbid on that? So this is now a third halacha that we're learning tonight. And Amema said to him, I am indeed. And how about Ashiura? Are you makbid even on the dinner of Revi'it? And he said, yes, I am. Now others say that Amemar answered, well, I am makbid about the container, that it has to be a kli. Amona, yes. And I am makbid on the chazuta, yes. But Ashiura lo kaptina, but I have a raya that we don't need to have a revius, because I read in the Mishnah in Yadayim, may revi'it notnim liyadayim le'echad, and even for two. So I figured from there, you see from there, you don't need a revius. But that was a big mistake that Amima was making. Velohi, obviously over there, it's a special case, not that you could split it into two, but that mishum deka'atu mishiyore tahara. And these words, just in case Gavi didn't put them down in the first time when we were doing the second Yadayim, which I find hard to believe, but just in case, it doesn't hurt to write down again, Shiyore Tahara. And the din is, therefore, if it was left over from a full revius that was used for Netila, it's kosher, even though the whole revius isn't there. Atkin Rav Yaakov min Har Pekod, not Labat Reviyat. That's a very interesting side point, by the way, over here on the language, that the word Natla, which we use nowadays for any type of Netilat Yadayim kli, actually referred originally to a glass kli. And the Natla was made out of glass. It wasn't used, because it's too delicate, it wasn't used for everyday use, but it was used as a reference cup. So they made a Natla for anybody who needed to measure whether he had a shear of revius in his Netilas Yadayim cup, whatever it was made of. He could come and check it out in Nahar Pekod. He could check it out against the Natla. Rav Ashi was in Hutzel, and he made a kuza, also the site of a revius, for the same purpose. A kuza is made out of cheres. The Omar Rava, I got news for you, says Rava. It doesn't even have to be a kli that was kosher as a kli originally. Let's say that you take the magufata chavit. So remember, the problem with the magufata chavit is that It well, I should really not say that. It's about Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what the problem is with the Magufa Tachavis. Let's take Tosfos's pshat, and I'll tell you afterwards what Rashi says. So the Magufa Tachavit is a earthenware top that was used as a actual seal. It wasn't meant to be taken on and off. That was what they would switch off with their sword to make an impression on someone. And it was a permanent seal in which the earthenware that was used for the chavit actually went up as a curved top, and it was meant for covering. It wasn't meant for holding anything. And if you would try to use it for holding anything, then it would turn over because it did not have a flat bottom. And therefore, you couldn't really use it as a kli because you would have to hold it. And a kli is meant to be able to stand on its own. That's how Tosfos understands. And therefore, the chiddush over here is if you made it into a kli by putting a little base on it that allows it to stand, so then it would be kosher, and that would be turning it into a kli, even though originally it wasn't meant for its use inside. It was meant to be used upside down, actually, so to speak, because it was supposed to be a cover. That's how Tosfos learns. Rashi learns that the Magufa Tachavit is flat. And because of that, when it says if you're metaken the Magufa Tachavit, what it means is if you gouge it out and turn it into a kli that has a bet kibul. And that was the problem. And of course, it's the same halacha that you would be turning it into a kli at that point, and therefore it would be kosher for netilat yadayim. So the same thing is true of a chemet or a kefisha. Now, those are water bottles that are made out of various hides, right, of animals. So the problem there is definitely Tosfos' problem. They don't stand on their own. They're all very nice for you to hold and to drink from, but you can't put them down if they're open because then, of course, the water will just spill out. So when it says shetikna, it means you put a little base on it, which holds up the skin, and then it's considered to be a regular kli, and that would be fine. And it's made out of leather, so it's waterproof, and therefore not limi hamli adayim. But suppose you waterproof a sack or a kupa. So those are things that are not naturally waterproof. You waterproof them by putting tar on the inside or whatever. So then, af al pi shemekablim, that is not kosher, even though lemaisa they are now waterproof. Ein notli mehem liyadayim, they are not considered to be kalim because these are not the way that you make kalim for mayim. It was sort of a partisan effort to cover them with tar, but that's not a normal way of making a kli, therefore not kosher for netilat yadayim. Now, how about if you don't have any water handy, but you do have a handkerchief or a paper napkin? Can you eat without touching the bread? You make sure that you're wearing a paper napkin between your fingers and the bread. And then, would you still need to be notil yadayim? Or do we say, well, you basically are not going to come into contact with the bread, and so memela, we don't need netilat yadayim. So what is the din? Can you use a handkerchief to make sure that you don't touch the bread? So mi chayshina dilma nargah, are we worried that, well, maybe just because you're so used to it, you'll end up touching somehow anyway. Olo, touch. So in other words, mi'ikra, then it's clear that if your hands are in a matzav in which they cannot touch the bread, so then there would be no consideration of a need for netilat yadayim. That's
Like
true.
gloves, right?
Gloves,
Gloves.
right. So there would be no consideration of netilat yadayim. And the only question is whether we need to be gozer because of the way that people are so used to handling their food that they won't actually stick to keeping their paws off of it. That's the shaila. So mi chashina dilma naga. Tashma, well, we seem to have the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah that actually addresses this issue, because it says over there, Kishenotnu lo l'Rebbe Tzadok acho pachot mikibetza. So if they would hand, we're saying over here, we're talking about the din of eating aroi, chutz l'sukkah. So you want to just snack for a moment. You're not being koveya asuda in any way. So the question was whether you should be makbid not to even take anything. So it brings that several of the chachamim wouldn't take anything outside of the sukkah. But Rav Tzadok, it says, he wasn't machmer. And if they would give Rabbi Tzadok less than a kibbetza to eat, he would take it in a handkerchief, and he would eat it outside of the sukkah, and he would not make a birchat hamazon after eating it, because he held that the shiur actually is a kibbetza. That was his shita. That was, remember, the machlokas and brochas, according to Rabbi Yehuda, since it says v'achalta v'savata, it has to be an achila sheyesh basviya, and that is dafka if it's a kibbetza. So if it was pochas v'kibbetza, he held that, first of all, it's not a kvias, so therefore he could eat it outside of the sukkah, and he held it's not b'chayiv yom birkat hamazon, which of course is related, and because of that he didn't say a brocha afterwards, and he ate it without netilat yadayim. Instead, he ate it by putting his hand in a paper napkin. So apparently, that what he's saying is, my love, hakabetza boy netilat yadayim. Now, hakpada over here seems to be that if he would have had a full kabetza and it would have been a chashava achila, he wouldn't have relied on the paper napkin, and he's only relying on it because there wasn't a shiur there that was mechayev him in a real netila. Apparently, no, not necessarily, says the Gemara. I mean, you've got three issues over here. You can't be certain that the pachas b'kibetza is critical to all three issues. It could be that, yes, if it's a kibetza, he would only eat it in a sukkah. If it's a kibetza, he would have said a birkas hamazon, but not necessarily if it was kibetza, he wouldn't have taken it in a mappa. Maybe that was just what he was taking, because you gave it to him and he was outside of the sukkah. Tashma. Okay. Let me tell you over a story. Shmuel once walked into Rav's house and he finds Rav eating bread by having his hands wrapped up in a towel. So Shmuel says to him, is this okay? Avdin Kedain? What, it's okay to eat bread without netilas yadayim by using a mappa? So Rav said to him, I did wash. Of course I washed. But I happen to be clean. I don't eat food with my fingers. So because that's all it is. So dati ktsarali. I'm a very, you know, careful person in how I eat. So I'm an istinis. And I don't eat food that I touch with my hands. So you see from here that they would not have been samech on a mappa. So apparently, halacha l'maaseh, you cannot eat with a mappa. And when Rabbi Zera came up there at Yisrael, he finds Rabbi and Rabbi Asi that they're eating with their fingers covered with beloy hamatot, which are these skin bottles, but these were already broken ones, worn out. And assuming, of course, that, well, why are they doing this? They must be doing it because they think that it's okay to eat without netilas yadayim like this. And he was shocked, and he said to them, Trey Gavre Ravervek of Hataychu, you are such great Gedolim, and you don't know what the Gemara just spoke about? Litu b'Rav and Shmuel, that both Rav and Shmuel were made that you don't really eat with a mappa. Did you not hear that Rav's response to Shmuel was that I did wash, I'm just datik tzara, so why did you not know that? And the Gemara says that actually Rabbi Zera was the one who made the mistake, because ishtamitete, the Omer of Tachlifu Baravimi Omer Shmuel, Rabbi Zera forgot a very important halacha that was quoted in the name of Shmuel himself, namely, itiru mapa lo ochle truma, But lo itiru mapalo chle taharot, and Rav Ami and Rav Asi were kohanim. So basically, if somebody actually eats truma, then he is zohir, more zohir. And being as he's more zohir, we can trust him not to be nogea, and therefore there's no gezera on kohanim not to eat with the mapa in the event that there's not water. But lo hitiru mapa, just the regular Yisraelim who are being makbid to eat the chulin betara. Chulin betara, we don't trust you that you're going to be that super duper aware of what you're doing, and you may easily forget for a moment and touch the food with fingers that were not netilat yadayim. That Rabbi Zera was accusing two kohanim who had every right to be eating with the mapa. Ibailu, how about another question? Somebody is feeding you. So do you need to be noto yadayim even though you're not touching the food at all? So is it a din in a person who's eating, or is it a din in a person who is in contact with the food? So ochel machmat ma'achil. Does a person like that sarich netilat yadayim or lo? And here too, be'etzem, it's not really a question, a fundamental question. It's a question, again, about whether we're chayish that he's going to touch it, because he's used to touching food. But it's clear to everyone that we did not make gezeiras about netilat yadayim because you're coming to eat the food. That isn't the point. It's not a din that anybody who eats. It's, again, a question of whether you're going to be metame. Like we said, the whole idea was the srach truma and cleanliness. If you don't have those ta'amim, so then for sure it's not mi'ikar adin. But the question is, would we make a gezera that you'll come into contact with it? So that's the question. Tzarich netilat yadayim if somebody is feeding you or not? Well, tashma. Rav Huna bar Sechora was standing in front of Rav Amnuna, and he takes a piece of meat together with a piece of challah, puts it together, and he pops it into Rav Amnuna's mouth. And Rav Amnuna eats it. He says, "Here, I got something delicious for you." And he puts it in his mouth. Very sweet, right? So, and he ate it. Rav Amnuna ate it. So then Rav Huna bar Sechora said to Rav Amnuna, "I just want you to know something, that if you'd be anyone else but Rav Amnuna, I would not have fed you anything." So why not? So it must be that what's special about being Rav Amnuna, I mean, you're saying, what's the different halacha of Rav Amnuna? Must be that Rav Huna bar Sechora said, "Oh, Rav Amnuna is going to be very makbid, and he's not going to touch it." So lav mishum de zahir v'lo naga. But that would mean that if it's someone who's aware that he's not supposed to touch, so then we're soimich it, because if it was a takana, that you have to actually be naito yadayim even if you're being fed, so then Rav Amnuna would never have eaten something without washing yadayim. So apparently you don't need mi'ikar hadin to be naito yadayim if you know that you're not going to touch it. Well, how do you prove that from here? Maybe all that he meant was that if you wouldn't be Rav Amnuna, who is Zoris Kadim Umashi Adam Ikara, that if you come into the Suda, obviously you're going to have washed before, and you're going to make sure that you're not going to come to have Yadayim that are Tmeis, then I wouldn't offend you. But since I know what kind of person you are, I'm sure that you were Naito Yadayim, and therefore I don't have to worry about popping a piece of delicious, I think this is great here, have some of this, into your mouth. Toshma. The Omer Rabbi Zera Amarav. So, so far we're not have a raya. But here, it says, Lo yitena dam pusala toch pif shel shamash. Do not put a piece of bread into the waiter's mouth. Ela im kein yodea boshin atal yadav. If you know that he was not to yadayim, then you can give him, here the poor guy is going nuts, serving everybody else, you feel so bad for him. You say, here, have a frankenblank, put it into his mouth. Don't do that unless you know that he was noto yadayim. And another din about the shamash himself. A shamash who was given a cup of wine makes a brocha, and he has to make a brocha on every cup of wine that he drinks, because the poor shamash never knows if anybody else is going to give him a cup of wine. So he's always a nimlach, because he can't take it on his own. So each time, he's going to have to make a new bracha. But he does not have to make a new bracha on every piece of bread that people pop into his mouth. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, he does. He has to make a separate bracha even on every piece of bread. Omer of Papa, well, I understand Rabbi Yochanan. There's no problem with what Rav said. Rav said you don't have to say a bracha on every piece of bread. And Rabbi Yochanan said you do. That I understand very simply. It depends. Rav was talking about where you're at a meal with civilized people. So that's called Adam Chashuv. There's an Adam Chashuv at the Seuda. He's never going to allow the waiter to be waiting at the table and not make sure that he's got plenty of the bread to eat. So therefore, the waiter can be certain that they're not going to allow him to sit there and serve without giving him another piece of bread. Now, Sheinkein, Rabbi Yochanan was talking about where there's nobody that is chashuv, and therefore they have no brains, and they're not thinking about the waiter. What's a waiter? Just a background robot of some kind, right? And therefore, why would he need to eat? And so maybe they're not going to give him anything to eat. So because of that, he would be a nimlach. So that I understand. So I don't like Adam chashuv. But Lamaisa, what does it say over here? The answer to our question. Rav said, don't give a waiter a piece of bread unless you know that it was noto yadav. So there's your answer. If somebody else is feeding you, it still demands netilat yadayim, right? No, doesn't prove anything. Because waiters are not normal people. Waiters are under tremendous amount of pressure. And because of that, they're not going to be able to concentrate on whether they should be touching the bread, not touching the bread in the middle of the serving. But like now he's supposed to remember, oh, he's putting it in. I have to be careful not to touch it. I mean, he's very tarud, but it could very well be that to stam a person that you put something into his mouth, he puts his hands down and he realizes I'm not supposed to touch. And yep, that tasted very good. But you can't bring a raya from here. Oy, okay, how about this braita? Tanarabanan. This stam is an interesting side, right? It has nothing to do with our question, but it has to do with behavior at a meal. So Tana Rabbana, if you've got a cup of wine that is being held either by the waiter or by the balabait, and you would like, you as a guest, that is to say, you want to give a piece of bread to the waiter without asking any money, well, don't do that. And it doesn't matter whether the waiter is holding the wine or whether a balabayit is holding the wine, because either way, it could easily spill. The balabayit sees somebody giving the bread to the waiter. He's thinking, who the heck? Well, who gave him permission to steal my bread? And he's like, gets nervous and spills his wine. And the waiter, who is busy giving out wine to people, all of a sudden somebody's popping a piece of bread into his mouth, can easily lose track of the cup and spill some of the wine. So that's not a good idea. Shema yera devar kalkala b'seuda, something may go wrong. And hashamash shalona tal yadav, if the shamash didn't wash his hands, then asur litein prusa l'toch piv, as we said before, but that doesn't prove anything because the waiter is different, maybe. Okay, so we don't have an answer for that. I got another question. Somebody is feeding you. Does the person who's feeding you and is going to be in touch with the food, since this is touching food for purposes of eating, is that called the equivalent of eating food, even though it's not you who's eating, and it's the other guy who's eating? Fascinating question. So does a ma'achil need netilat yadayim or not? Well, we know that we have a case like this from the Mishnah about Yom Kippur. Actually, this is a prize. The Tani Devei Menashe, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, so if a woman has to feed her child on Yom Kippur, even though it's usur to wash on Yom Kippur, but she is allowed to wash that hand that she's going to be feeding her kid with. So you see from there that you do have to have washed your hands in order to feed. And Shammai HaZaken did not want to feed his kid by even washing one hand, and they were so angry at him, they were gozer on him, he's got to wash two hands. What kind of business is this big machmer with a kid who needs food? So anyway, but you see from there that if you're going to feed a child, you need to wash. So apparently, that's the Iker Halacha. Amar Abaye, no, this has nothing to do with washing for food. This has to do with washing for Shivta. Shivta is actually the Ruach Ra that is called Bat Melach. And in the morning, that's why we do the Tilat Yadayim right away in the morning, the Yiddish Negovasser, because you have to wash your hands three times in order to discourage the Shivta and to get it off of you. And because of that, if you don't do that, then you're going to end up putting that Ruach Ra on the food that you touch. That's how Rashi learns that the Shivta is the equivalent of Bat Melech. Tosus learns that Shivta is a completely different Ruach Ra. It's not the way that we generally refer to Bat Melech. And it is it's a shade, a Ruach Ra, that goes after young children if they were fed by someone who didn't wash before feeding. So it's a special, particular case, but it has nothing to do with the din of Netilat Yadayim.
Rebbe called it the choker of children.
Okay, is that a...
That's how it worked. It choked. It would choke
Okay, it's true. But I thought you were saying something funny, but we could bring a raya, very good raya. Here is poor little Shmuel as a little boy who comes back from Cheder one day, and he's crying. So his father says to him, well, what happened? Why are you crying? I got smacked by my Rebbe. Tamachin Raboy. What did you do wrong? Am I? Because he said to me, you gave my son a piece of bread and you didn't wash your hands. And I'm mad at you. So he smacked me. So Shmuel's father asked him, so why didn't you wash your hands? So Shmuel said, wash my hands? He's eating and I'm supposed to wash my hands? It's ridiculous. So Shmuel's father, in the Gemara's version of the teacher is always right, said, your teacher is such an idiot that lo mistaye de lo gomir. Not only does he not know halachas, but he goes around hitting kids because he doesn't know the halacha? Lo mistaye de lo gomir, but mimcha na mimochi? So you see from here that Shmuel was right, and that halacha kishmuel as the little boy, and he didn't have to wash his hands. And the halacha is that someone who's eating because someone who's feeding him does need a tilat yadayim, because we're cheshesh that he's going to touch, and therefore the gezer, the original gezer of tilat yadayim, is for achila, whether you plan on touching or you don't plan on touching. But the ma'achil eino tzarich to tilat yadayim. Certainly for feeding someone, there is no need for netilat yadayim. Okay, getting back now to our basar v'gvina issues. So we have a moment of pure Richie pleasure here, and he's ready to go after so long without our Richie. It feels like forever.
In the Holy Land, no less. Right. In what do you call it? Not quite the holy city, but not far away. Zog the Halak Mishnah.
Nice. So rare Adam Basar Gvinabi Mitpachat Achat. There's no problem of putting your meat and your cheese inside your backpack together. This is not the same as putting them on the table over there. There's a problem of eating, and that one may take from one and then the other. But if you're talking about your backpack, no problem. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, the truth is, there's not even a problem on the same table. If we're talking about two people who don't know each other, because they're certainly not going to go now and take somebody else's food from in front of him. Of course, they wouldn't do that if they don't know each other. So therefore, Shnei Achsanaim, who don't know each other, can be Ochlen al Shulchan Echad. One of them can be eating meat. One of them can be eating cheese. And we're not afraid that they might end up putting the cheese and the meat and all the things that we said in that original Mishnah of Ein Olim L'Shulchan Echad. I don't understand the thing about the backpack. I mean, what are you saying? As long as they don't touch each other, what's the big problem if they do touch each other? I mean, you're not talking about hot cheese, are you? Or hot bread, hot meat. So even if they touched each other, it's cold. So if you know, Gezeb is my hobby. It's Sonein, but Sonein, you're not going to do any Isser. Omer Abaye, it's true. You're not going to be doing any Isser. And you don't need to actually do a klipa, peeling off the outside, because there's certainly no blia if there's no heat. But you do have to wash it off, don't you? So because of that, what if you're going to forget? So because of that, the Rabbanan said, don't allow them to touch each other, because you may forget to actually wash it off. So we don't do something in a situation that will be machai of you to wash off, no matter what that situation is. So, okay, so what we're talking about over here is not really true that you would need to wash them off, because if they're dry, you don't even need to wash them off, according to most shittas. So, unless it's fatty. And so the Gemara is basically taking this as a, you know, simple situation without getting into the details. Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shnei Achsanaim, Ochlim al Shulchan Echad, Ze Basar, Veze Gvina, and so on. Omer of Chanan Barami Omer Shmuel, this is only if they all know each other, obviously. Lo Shana al Shein Makirin Ze Ze. But if they're not strangers, then, no, maybe they're friendly and they may actually take from one another's portion. And Raya is true, what he just said from this Braita, Tanya Nami Yochi. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shnei Achsanayim, Shnei Tarchu L'Pundok Echad. Here's the way the Braita expands on what it was that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said in the Mishnah, Shnei Achsanayim, and the Braita presents the Shnei Achsanayim as complete strangers, because the Braita says, well, if one of them is coming from the north, and one of them is coming from the south, so one can come with his piece of meat, the chatichato, the other one can come with his gvina, and they can get sit down at the same picnic table, and ochlen al shulchan echad, ze basar, ze gvina, ve ein choshishin, and it's not us to put it on the table unless they're all touching each other, betvisa achad. What? Tvisa achad? What do you mean, touching? I thought it's not us, sir. Touching, you don't have to be on the same table. I don't get what you're saying. You just said if they're touching each other, you can't even put them in your backpack. So what are we talking about on the table? I mean, ke'ein tvisa achat. What we're saying is two people who know each other is only where there's nothing between the two. That's the point. If there's a way to distinguish between the two portions, so then if it's not ke'ein tvisa achat, let's say you put each one on a separate tablecloth or a separate placemat. Or
the cheese stands alone.
Where you put bottles of milk or something, or bottles of water between the two. So then, if there's something that's a mechitza between them, it reminds them that they're not supposed to mix. Omar le revyemi arba shalmi zambaye. Well, what about if they actually know each other very well? As a matter of fact, they know each other so well, they wouldn't give a piece of nothing to the other one, a bum. My brother? Are you kidding? So what about if they're two brothers and they're makpidim zelzet? So is the very fact that they're makpidim zelzet, does that equal coming zeh min ha-darom, v'zeh min ha-tzafon, or is there a different problem? Omar lei, so Abaye said to him, the very common saying that the Gemara uses when it wants to point out that the particularities of a case are never sufficient to distinguish the din because people don't know. So the classic case of that, if you remember, was from Pesachim. So it said over there, you're not allowed to make these cookies with designs because since it takes a little bit of time to make the design, we're worried that the baker is going to get all into the design and maybe got messed up. And meanwhile, the letter got chomet. So we don't allow any designs. So anyway, there was the Baitas Bakery. The Baitas Bakery was a major bakery. And he did everything with designs, but they were all automated. He had these machines that would punch out the pieces and so on. So he says, how about Baitas's designs? So the response was, and this became the actual model, which Gavi, I think, should write down. Kola sarikina surin, and sarike Baitas are mutarin. So all of the design cookies, they're all awesome for anyone in the world, except for Baitas Bakery. Then you can... I mean, it's crazy. How can people be expected to differentiate? The same thing is true over here. Two brothers, people see two brothers, one eating milkshakes, one eating fleishakes on the same table. What are they supposed to know now? They get the psychiatric reports. I mean, I understand. They'll say, so all brothers are usher, only Yaakov and Esav are mutter. I mean, they're not going to know that. So therefore, this is not a reasonable question, said Abaya. Well, wait a second. That can't be true. Because how do you explain the fact that Rabbi Yochanan was quoted as saying that if somebody only has one coat and it's chol hamoed and it's dirty, he doesn't have a second coat. He's allowed to put it in the laundry in chol hamoed. So why won't people say the same thing? People will say, this guy's sitting there washing his coat in the river. How come this guy is allowed to wash during Chol HaMoed? Don't you remember? We explained that. It's clear from the fact that he left the belt in that coat that he would never have had another coat that he could have worn because that he would have taken the belt out. And therefore, since he's just laundering the whole thing, he obviously doesn't have any other place to put his belt. And therefore, it proves that he is clearly a person that only has this one. Okay, that's it. That's basically how Rashi says it over here. The way that we learned it in Moed Katan was a little bit different. That if you have only one, what it says over here, that he's allowed to, I translated it as a coat, but b'maisa chaluk is also, you know, your robe. So the way that actually that Rashi explained it over there, Moed Katan, is that if he was doing the laundry, he would definitely use his belt so that his shirt doesn't open up and he's sitting over there without any clothes on. So then people will understand, oh my gosh, this poor guy has nothing else to wear. So he's using his belt so that at least he can wash his outside clothing. So, okay, very different. But basically, there are minor differences between the two. And when we get back to Moed Katan, Bezrat Hashem, next time I'm assuming we'll do it in the Yerushalmi, so we'll have an opportunity to explore these Bavli differences. And okay, that brings us to, whoa, one of the most chomer sugyos in all of Shas. We're finally getting to Chaticha Nasis, the Vela, and Efshe L'Sochato. Probably Gavi should get an extra cartridge for his magic wand, just in case he runs out of ink. All right, everybody, wishing you a wonderful Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov, Besorot Tovot, Geula Krova, and we'll see you Bezrat Hashem tomorrow at a regular time under the great leadership of our very intrepid Capitan, who will introduce the daf, assuming that he's the first one in. Shavua Tov.